It's Monday, April 15th, and this is Season 3, Episode 32 of the 4-Star Spurs Podcast. I'm your host, Tommy. This week with us is Rick.
Hello.
Anthony.
How's it going?
And Lucas.
Hello, hello.
Okay, so if anybody doesn't realize, we actually had the same people from last week, except I'm hosting and Anthony's on the panel this time. But speaking of Anthony, you were in New Orleans this past weekend with your wife.
Yeah, and thanks for hosting this week.
No problem.
I'm probably going to be a little bit hungover for this whole episode. It's kind of I had about five straight days of binge drinking, so I'm a little bit groggy. But I had a great time, and we got to go to a place called Finn McCool's. It's It's where they don't really have an official supporters club,
correct?
But it's where everybody goes to watch. We were the 6:30 game here. Here and in New Orleans, so it was a early match. So it was really just Spurs fans there at 6:30 in the morning. Nobody else was coming in.
Were they selling? Did they sell booze for the match or no?
They sell booze. I think they sell booze 24 hours a day in New Orleans. It's that type of place. Yeah, I mean, you can carry it in a plastic cup out of the place and leave. So
is it a Spurs only bar or is it
bar? It wasn't exclusive. Like I was saying, it's a shared bar, but because it's 6:30 in the morning and we're playing Huddersfield,
you have no business being there if you're not Spurs.
It was only 10 Spurs fans or so. It was actually a pretty cool experience because it was mostly out of towners. Me and my wife Shannon, so we were from Chicago. There was a couple guys from Baltimore. He actually gave me a really cool beer cozy, which was really nice. And then a couple guys from New York, and then there was like about three or four locals. So
this leads into something, but how was the weather?
Oh, the weather was beautiful the whole trip. It was maybe high around low 80s during the day, and high 60s at night.
And you flew back into snow.
Yeah, I landed wearing shorts, and I had a sweatshirt was the warmest thing I had to throw over top of it, and I got creamed by a huge snowstorm that was like practically whiteout conditions right after I landed, but I made it in safe.
Yeah, for a side note, in terms of the weather, for those who don't know, in the Midwest, particularly Chicago, we got multiple inches of snow, and today it all melted more or less. And tomorrow, which will be a Tuesday, it's supposed to be a high of 70 degrees. So
cool.
Yeah, it's global warming or whatever. Take it for what it's worth. But, Anthony, the reason I want to bring up the weather is because I was actually at Finn McCool's a few years ago for a guy's trip. And they actually had, from what I remember, they had outdoor TVs out there during the Rugby World Cup when I was there. So that would have been kind of cool to be there for.
There was outdoor tables because when I showed up there like about 15 minutes after 6 and they were still setting up. They hadn't opened up the doors to the bar yet. So it's not like us where we're here open like a half hour early. They were still getting stuff ready. And I sat on the picnic tables outside, but I didn't see a TV set up.
Ah, fair enough. Okay, so now to the juicy stuff. We're going to review two games, and we're going to preview two games. And for those who don't know, three of those matches are going to be regarding the same team. So that's going to be fun. Okay, so first up is our Champions League match that happened last Tuesday. We defeated Manchester City 1-0. I was mildly surprised, but of course very pleased, like everyone else is here. Thoughts? Anthony, go ahead.
Well, for me, this was kind of counter to how we typically play. We normally dominate possession, and most teams don't dominate possession on Manchester City. But we had 41%, so that was pretty typical for probably what you would have against a team like City. But then we had more shots and more shots on target than they did. We had 13 shots and 4 on target to their 10-2. So we certainly made chances, and I thought we played very, very well. It was a fun experience. We did what we had to do. We got the one goal. It was a little scary until we did, and then we just held them off. I was pretty pleased.
I think the biggest thing for me was that clean sheet. I went into this game thinking that I didn't have the highest expectations. But with us in the Champions League, there's always that little seed of belief, as in you never know what could happen.
Right.
We were 1 point out of 9. Staring down elimination in the very beginning after three matches, and all of a sudden we found ourselves able to overcome that kind of adversity. So we don't really know what we're going to get when we step out there for Champions League, but we've found ways to make things happen. For me, the big thing was being able to keep that clean sheet, because I didn't see a way, if it was, even if we had won 2-1 and they had that away goal advantage, I would have had zero confidence going into Wednesday.
Yeah, stopping them getting away goal.
Yeah, keeping huge. Them from getting a goal was the most. Hell, if even if it was 0-0, 0-0, I would have taken it. Just so we didn't have them with that little advantage. We could go try and nick in a draw, like just any kind of draw away or something. Keeping that clean sheet, especially with the Bush League penalty. Having that adversity thrown in our face and Hugo stepping up the way it was, that clean sheet is even sweeter.
Well, exactly. And I believe that's only the third time the whole season that Man City haven't scored.
Damn.
Which is pretty good.
I kind of... Well, I want to go back on
what
your...
What were the others?
Maybe
I can't even think of one.
I know they lost to Crystal Palace, but I don't
know.
Yeah,
but that was... Maybe like, they had two, I think they had a goal or two in there.
Maybe they got shut out?
Nah.
Well, we can look that up. And we're going to talk about the upcoming matches against some of the second half.
No, it's all good. Well, I wanted to talk about how you're saying with the shutout. I was immensely impressed with Hugo, and like Rick has mentioned in maybe one or two podcasts ago, this is the game, or these are type of games that you see or that you're dependent on Hugo for, and he delivered. If it was anybody else in goal, who knows if he would have seen that penalty or any of those other shots later in the game. So I must say, hats off to him, of course. Like I said, we'll talk about MVP, LVP later. But, man, Anthony, what do you got?
Well, I also want to give credit to the midfield in this one. I really think when we thought about Winks, Sissoko stacking up against City, I think most of us were pretty nervous about this match. And they did have a rough time of it, but they certainly held it together and gave us the enough possession to score a goal and did their part defensively to keep us in this game.
True, but them not playing Bernardo Silva and De Bruyne at the same time
and
really
Sané
helped us.
And Sané and De Bruyne came on in the 89th minute, so we got a gift there, and that's one of the reasons that, again, with Trippier, I was super worried going into that game. He ended up having a very nice game, but he also didn't have to worry about Sané, and so it's something
He was marking Sterling.
No, yeah, absolutely. I just think that we're going to see an entirely different animal on Wednesday, so we're going to have to reshuffle everything, as in everything we learned from last week is completely useless, because this is going to be an entirely different match from both sides.
Right.
Again, we don't line up with Kane. Something that they now have to adjust.
Well, and this is more of a question for you guys, because I'm kind of interested in what your thoughts on this. Was that hubris on the part of City, like not playing De Bruyne or Sané?
Yeah, I think it was. I think it was Guardiola thinking he can beat us with any lineup. I think that's what happened. When it wasn't working, I'm surprised he left the substitution so late. But I think the initial squad selection was definitely arrogant. Definitely.
Yeah, I actually agree with you there. I think he felt that it didn't matter who he threw, they were going to take us, or at least get a couple of goals. Like, I think he thought no matter what, even if the worst case scenario came to fruition, it'd be 2-2 or 1-1 or 3-3 or something, where he would have a couple of goals and they would get to go back into this like second leg where he just gets to do what they do best, coming back home with that advantage and then just smash them like they did with Schalke, or what was it? I mean, this isn't a real example, but like Brentford in the FA Cup, but like, or the League Cup. But it was just, I think that was kind of on his plate, was just go there, we'll get a result, doesn't matter, we don't need to throw out our best because we're still chasing the league and we got Palace coming up at the weekend, so we'll need some players. And I think that, like Rick said, I think the beginning part was hubris. I don't know why it took as long as it did for him. I mean,
no,
what was about the
that.
89th minute was when you put on De Bruyne and Sané as a package deal.
Because you were waiting for it, and they were warming up from half time. And you were waiting for it and waiting for it, and it never happened.
And to be fair to Pep on this one, I don't like to give that guy credit because I think he's a dickhead, but I think that they had – there was – it wasn't as if their plan – that the players that they had out there weren't performing. Like, they had that – a couple stretches of 10 minutes apiece that were just – they were in control of the game, bombing forward, putting on efforts, and we were able to withstand it. So you can't really say that their tactics weren't working. They just weren't getting that one to fall. But I think from our standpoint, I think we actually were able to withhold everything they were throwing at us. So I think there's credit to us.
But when you're playing a Champions League game, it doesn't matter who you're playing.
There's going to be those periods.
You should put your best team out. I mean, that was arrogance on his part, definitely.
Yeah, I don't know. For my opinion is I more or less agree with you, Rick and Lucas. I think the reason why he's put those subs in so late is probably like, we'll get a goal. And then he's like, ah, fuck, might as well just throw them in there. But I still think he probably has
It made no sense. Why bring them on in the 89th minute? They're not going to do anything in the 89th minute.
He probably had the mentality of, if we don't score a goal, we'll get them in the second leg. But if we can steal a goal here and get an away goal, I'm fine with that.
But Rick's also, like what Rick said, or that stat he said earlier about how this is only the third time this season that they haven't scored. So in some sense, you kind of understand Pep. I mean, he just assumed it would happen because it always does. They always go score goals. So he assumed it doesn't matter what lineup he throws out, they're going to score. I mean, I think he was foolish for it, but I'm not going to yell at him about it.
Well, to be fair, their second squad is better than most of the league's first.
They're a fantasy roster.
So it's understandable to think that they could go with that squad and get by, but when they're playing a team like us, maybe they're thinking of us still as a struggling team and not the team that had crawled out of our struggles. And maybe that's where the hubris was, or the failure to see where we were at as a squad. But it certainly was. It was either arrogance or a complete lack of respect for Spurs.
And that's actually one of the things with his failure to see that. Actually, was probably why I loved Son's goal as much as it was. It was that how it came against the run of play. And it was just us getting bombarded for 12 minutes, and then somehow Son gets that one opportunity, finds that ball, keeps it in play. Everyone on City's defense is throwing their hands up, yelling for it to be out of play, and he turns around, just finds that 1 second and slots it. I think that's what I always preach about, is that like taking those moments and taking those chances, and that was the perfect example. We did get outplayed for about 12 minutes, but again, in these kind of Champions League games, this isn't Applewell or whoever that you're going to play and expect to be smashing them. This is the quarterfinals. And from here going forward, whoever we're playing is going to be a world-class opponent, and you need to find those moments. And to see it the way Sun did after we had soaked and soaked and soaked up all that pressure and flipped it on him like that, that felt even better, knowing that Pep had been sitting there expecting his result and things started looking his way and then just got swiped out from underneath him in a second.
Okay, I want to talk about the white elephant from this match, or the elephant that's sticking out in the room, is Kane's injury, of course. They said it's significant. Rumors say that unless we make the Champions League final, that's probably the only time he'll play. Who knows? But regarding the game, it felt like they were hacking him to bits. It more or less felt like the goal of the game, get into Harry Kane's head.
Well, how Fernandinho didn't get a yellow at least.
Oh, yeah. And also, I forget what happened specifically, but like somebody like kind of went at Harry Kane's head. Was it Fernandinho?
It was Fernandinho.
No, it was in the air,
and then it was on the ground, and it was a knee to the ribs.
Yeah,
all
and
in
then,
one swift
like,
motion.
Harry Kane, he's like, fuck this, I had enough, and kind of went, had a jab at him, but man, that was kind of rough. I mean, we'll talk about this when we preview the next two matches without Harry Kane, but right now, thankfully we have Lucas firing all cylinders from last Saturday. Llorente looked good, but I don't know, Anthony, what were your thoughts on it?
Well, for me, it's like they were playing so dirty. And granted, mm-hmm. we play an aggressive game too. And I try to remember that I'm always looking at it through, I guess you'd say, lily white glasses or whatever. I'm always looking at it from our squad's perspective. So it's tough for me to be objective at times. But it seemed like they were playing like a dirty Stoke type game from a few years ago.
There's a difference between playing tough and playing dirty.
Yeah.
There is a difference.
And I get it. Like, we were playing tough, and they certainly stepped up with what felt like dirtiness. And I think you're right. Like, it feels like they know Harry Kane has a weakness, and that they go after. I don't think they're trying to hurt him per se. I think they know if they come after him aggressive, that's how you can kind of beat back Harry Kane's game a bit. And it's frustrating because, like, now we've lost our top goal scorer for the rest of the season.
This is going to be a pretty unpopular opinion, but I don't blame him at all. I would have done the same thing if I were them in their shoes. Looking at our recent track before this game, I brought up Palace, that 2-0 win we had at home with Palace was the first time we had scored more than one goal in a game since Dortmund, the first leg. And that was without Kane. And since he got back, we had a bunch of 1-0 efforts where Kane was the only one to score. So if I'm City, I'm sitting there thinking, why not? Why not take this guy out of it and make them prove that somebody else can step up? So I have no problem with how they played, even though, yes, it was dirty. But again, it's that mastering the dark arts. My problem was with VAR. If it's there, it should be doing its job. If we can spend 5 minutes dissecting whether or not an accidental Danny Rose tackle might have deflected off his hand, a call in which not one single City player protested.
Yeah,
they all just accepted the corner.
No one accepted.
Exactly. They didn't even think for a second that it was a regular reaction. It was a regular challenge. But if we could spend 5 minutes dissecting that, we can't take one or two looks at all of these possible reds and yellows that they were throwing out there. Like, again, I say I have no problem with their decision to play like that. Not how I would do it, but I understand why. But my problems with VAR, if it's there, it needs to be doing what it's supposed to be doing. We can now retroactively, we can look back and say, wow, that was a blatant red. Wow, that was a scumbag move. Yellow. We can make calls in the past now, and if we can do it for cheesy little handballs here and there or stuff like that, I don't see why it can't be a forearm to the back of Harry Kane's neck.
Well, and to your point, Lucas, the Champions League is supposed to be where that stuff's not allowed. Now, we have two Premier League sides playing each other in the Champions League, and it looked like we were allowed to play like we were playing the dirtiest of Premier League games. And you're right, with the VAR being in effect, why was that even allowed? Like if we played an Italian side that way, they would be throwing themselves on the ground, crying so hard.
There would have been legal charges.
Yeah. So why was this game refereed differently than other Champions League games? Because you're right, I'm thinking it through the view of how we normally face City, and it seems fairly normal that we'd expect something like this. But this was a Champions League game, so good point.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, and that's in England, we're known, like, that is the league that's, like, the stuff that gets away in the Premier League is, it's a much more physical, demanding league than, like, I watched the first half of the Atletico Juve first leg in the round of 16. And out of 45 minutes, at least 20 of it was spent with both teams surrounding the ref screaming about calls. It was the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. In England, you actually expect to just get on with it. So I was expecting there to be a little bit more of that since both teams were on the same page. To have the refs with VAR now at play, it was, I don't know. It was, like I said, it drove me nuts how much time you can spend dissecting one thing and not even a little blip to the ear and his little earpiece saying, like, hey, maybe we should recheck this. Or, hey, and again, even Danny Rose, not to say he was wrong when he threw the complete face palm to, was it Sterling or who was it? Who was it when Danny Rose stiff-armed that guy?
No, it was Fernandinho.
It was Fernandinho. Even that, like, benefited us that they didn't give it a call, but that should have been something you look back at. Like, or that's something that you could have used VAR for. So I don't understand where,
how it's being used.
There's so much power in the hands of VAR, and there's not a clear explanation to the fans as to how that power is going to be used or divvied out. You have no idea what the rules are, why it's going to be used. All of a sudden, you're sitting there, and you see him just go to his ear. Not one person assumed that that's what that meant. when he put his hand to his ear with Danny Rose.
That's because the VIA person, whoever it was, looked at it and went, oh, there's a decision that needs to be made, and then he told the ref.
Exactly, and then where was that guy for the rest of the 89 minutes?
But
when there was just a bloodbath going on.
But that's the thing. We don't know what constitutes a VAR review and what doesn't. You know?
Is it just goals and offsides?
I don't know.
And handballs?
I don't know.
Well, the problem, now
that's one of the problems, too, is that the fans have zero clue and we're left in the dark.
Well, and we have two of our best players injured now. And granted, I think Dele Alli is going to be able to come back from his arm fracture and play, because it's at least it's not the part of the body he needs for soccer, but
football.
Thank you.
I'm no doctor, of course. Lucas, you could probably, since you're an EMT, you might be able to provide a little more insight. But I'm assuming once the bone's set in to a certain degree, and then you have the cast on, he probably can start playing.
I mean, even if it wasn't, I was screaming about this in the group text the other day. Just tape it up. We got four more weeks, and then you can go spend the next 3 months on the beach at Hawaii or wherever you want to go for your summer vacation. You just go spend it there. But for 4 weeks, probably please just tape it up. Tape it up and just gut it out.
Yeah.
Well, Jamie Vardy played with the cast for months.
Yeah.
And Sun did. Sun broke it in an international game for Korea.
Yep. And he struggled, or he not struggled,
took a while
but
to get, he sat a bit coming back, but then was...
Yeah, he gutted through it, so why not? Okay, so anybody have anything else that they want to say about this match? Or should we save it for the preview?
We'll tie it back in during the preview.
Sounds good. Okay, MVP, what do you guys have?
Anyone...
sure.
I think it's got to be Hugo, right? I mean, the save alone, I mean, and he just played great. Like, they did have, I think it was two shots on target otherwise that he was able to stop. I think keeping the clean sheet is what made this a legitimate win for us, and I think it's got to be Hugo.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I agree, Hugo.
Lucas?
I gotta say it too. I'm gonna go Hugo.
I certainly agree with Hugo as well, but I want to give Toby a honorable mention as well. I think he played very well. Had some good deflections, and you know, I think he also aided in the clean sheet. In terms of LVP, is there any? If there are, who is it?
It's tough to say. I didn't feel like anyone played poor enough that they warrant a shout out from one of us. I think there were moments here and there, but I don't think that anyone was the
No, everybody had a reasonably good game.
That's how I felt as well.
No one had an outstandingly bad game or did anything really bad. So
Erickson looked on it too. I thought he stepped up for this game.
Yeah, he was a bit quiet in the first half, and the second half he got better.
I mean, he certainly, he always, like, runs the most out of anybody out there just about on the pitch. Like, you can almost count that he's going to do the most distance, and he did this game for sure.
Definitely put that in the category of, like, an honorable mention for MVP. Not complete MVP, but he did look great, and I would put Wanyama in there as well, because getting thrown into that situation, can't remember the last time he was on the pitch for meaningful minutes, and to look as good as Wanyama did when he came out, he was something that I would... Definitely like to give a special shout-out from Big Vic.
And we'll certainly... Actually, this is a good transition now.
Perfect one.
We'll certainly talk about him now when we review Huddersfield. I think the four of us, we all predicted pretty hefty wins. We did get that. We won 4-0. I'm not saying this person will be the MVP, but Lucas Moore, he set a... he created history... Let's just say, and he had the first hat trick at the new Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Lucas, I can see you're pretty excited about that.
I am indeed. I was on this podcast last year, the day we signed him, and we did our deadline day for January, and I just raved about him. But he was also, this is my opportunity to claim victory for my season prediction that we did at the very beginning, and I said that Lucas would have over 10 goals this year. He now has 10 exactly.
What was the assist count that you...
He would have 10, but there's a lot of work to be done on that.
There's still, what, five or... Yeah. actually probably at least six games left. So
he's got some work to do.
Yeah, but
still open. But goals, he's got 10 in the Premier League, 2 in Champions League.
Lucas has the same amount of goals as Rashford.
Yes, he does.
Damn.
Yep.
Not bad.
Was anybody a little worried about the backflip, though?
No, that's what Robbie Keane should do when he does his celebration.
Well, he's not Brazilian. He's a white Irishman.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, when I saw that, I'm just like, please don't tear an ACL. Please don't tear an ACL. And I'm like, okay, he got the landing. Because for anybody that... Actually, Anthony might be the only one that knows because he watches MLS. That's recording right now, but...
Yeah.
This was maybe 10 years ago at least. This guy scored a worldy of a goal. I forget what team. And he did a backflip. Ended up tearing his ACL.
I remember this. I couldn't tell you who it was.
Well, you want to know the kicker, though. Aside from that, the goal got called back for offside. So he did it for nothing. So, like, when I see that, I'm just like, even though it's flashy and it gets the blood flowing, gets the fans going, I'm just like,
But, yeah, it might be a little cringy, but the most important thing
is... what you
want to
see.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not just somebody who's excited to score for himself. It was someone that was excited to score for us. And that's one of the nice parts, again, trying to be a little bit optimistic about Harry Kane getting hurt. But you see guys getting chances now to make their name for the club. And who would have thought that Victor Wanyama would have a goal before Harry Kane at the new stadium and Lucas Moura would have a hat trick?
That was a very nice goal by Victor.
Yeah, you would,
very nice.
Like, I remember when I was streaming that on my iPad, I'm just like, he did that? Because, you know, D-mids never think that they would do that. You would think, like, Son, Ali, Eriksson, yeah. But never Victor Wanyama, but he did it, and it was fucking beautiful.
But again, the biggest part with that was, as great as that was, huge, huge shout-out goes to Llorente on that for his hold-up play, which, again, sounds cliche because that's about all he's good for lately. But he played so well on Saturday, and his hold-up play, especially on that goal, the way he was able to shield it off and then dummy it to a running Wanyama, and good for both of them. Him for doing it and Wanyama for making that aggressive run.
Oh, yeah.
It was perfect timing.
Well, and on that point, I was going to point out this was a heavily rotated squad that we saw. I think when you have a team that's already relegated, you expect that you can play a team that's not your top team and still win. But I think most of us thought we still had to go with a pretty strong squad this one. But we saw this heavily rotated. Obviously, Harry's injury, Dele Alli not being quite ready to come back with the cast yet. We were forced into some of these decisions, but there was other. The back line was rotated. Fourth was in there. Walker Peters got a run out. Like, I was a little bit worried that we wouldn't have as high a scoring game as we did, but then we dominated possession like we would with our top team, 70-30. We had bombarded them with 22 shots, 5 on target, and I was just really happy, enjoyed watching this game. I was so happy for Lucas. And as you said, Llorente, like, what an amazing hold-up play that we got out of him. He didn't feel like he needed to go out there and score the goal. He just contributed in a way that's different than what we're used to seeing, but was still equally valuable in this type of game. Now, would we get that out of him? I'd be a little nervous with him against City, maybe. Trying to do the same type of hold-up play, but I think this was appropriate for Huddersfield.
That's the one caveat about this game. We can rave about the goals, we can rave about how good we played, we can rave about, you know, the fact that we had a rotating team and still won, but the caveat is that Huddersfield are bloody awful. I mean, they are terrible. The fact that they were relegated or not relegated is irrelevant. They've won 3 games the whole season, and we're passing the ball along our back line in their half, and they're not pressing us.
Yeah,
they were terrible. I mean, they were there for the taking. It wasn't like we played spectacularly. We didn't have to. They're just terrible.
So actually, glad you mentioned that, Rick. Shubes actually had a question, so we can segue into this very easily. Anthony, what's his question?
Yeah, so Shubes asks us on Facebook, was at the match Saturday. While both team and individual performances from many was a delight, how big a caveat is it that we played an already relegated Huddersfield? P.S. Sorry, Rick, but Sissoko was proper on the Weetabix that day.
Well, for people that don't know, on the Weetabix means he was very powerful, very strong. But this is what I'm saying. We're playing Huddersfield. We could have put anybody out and we would have won that game.
And
if Sissoko can't dominate Huddersfield, then he can't dominate anybody.
Yeah, but again, this is where you have to remember that we just lost to Burnley and Southampton. You could say home and away, new stadium, no stadium. It doesn't matter. We went out there against Southampton, a team who also let us absolutely smash them for 45 minutes, and we ended up losing that game.
Because they upped their game and they played better in the second half. But Huddersfield were not doing that. They,
which was because we put them away with that second goal within 30 seconds.
Huddersfield couldn't beat a pub team right now. I mean, they are awful.
I'm not going to disagree with you to say that Huddersfield has anything more than what they are. They're clearly a crap team. But there are teams that are just about, what did it take us to beat Fulham? A 94th minute Harry Winks header from Nkudu? Like that's my whole point, is that it's taken us, that's why it was so refreshing on Saturday, is it's taken us a lot of effort, and we've had a lot of negative performance against these shit clubs. So to just say, oh, well, it was Huddersfield, they're shit, it's like, so were a lot of the teams that have just beaten us.
No, but there's a difference between a shit Huddersfield and a shit Fulham. You know, Fulham can raise themselves to a point where they can win games. Huddersfield, Jesus. I mean, that was...
Yeah, that was...
It's probably the worst Premiership team I've ever seen.
I would say, if not... They're close second to Derby County from,
yeah.
I think, 07-08 season with 11 points. Take a look at it. It's pretty bad. But, Shubes, to answer your question, kind of mentioned this a few episodes ago with your question about a slump buster. This was a slump buster for us. Down in the dumps team, you know, they, just looking at them, they did not really have what you would call confidence.
They didn't want to be there. Yeah. They were on holiday.
Their fates were sealed. Yeah. So the fact that Lucas got a hat trick, when Yam got a goal, like, those outliers are great because it gives them confidence. Well, it shows them to do better.
Well, that's the funny thing is, every goal that we scored was a good goal.
Yeah. I mean, and actually,
they weren't tap-ins. They weren't, we didn't outplay them or whatever. They were actually really good goals.
And I actually want to, aside from how I talked about Wanyama's goal, which was a fun one to see, but... the first and third Lucas Moura goals, they were at very steep angles. If anybody doesn't remember, I do ask that you watch replay because they were like on the corner of like the outside of the 6-yard box. I would say at least 3, 4, or 5 yards wide of the post and on the right foot nonetheless. So there was a lot of technique and skill that had to be there. Lucas?
You're absolutely right with that shout out, and it's brings me into a little bit of a controversial area. I don't want to sound like I think that having Harry Kane on the pitch is a bad thing. I'm not one of those idiots on Twitter that's going to say he should have never been out there. But we collectively as a group have not looked ourselves since he's been back, and that's one of the reasons it was so cool to see those, like you said, the first and third goals from those angles. The cool part about it was that Lucas didn't even hesitate. There was no hesitation. He literally got a quick glance, knew where he was, and he fired it past the keeper both times from a weird angle. And it's so cool to see. Again, it's not about we shouldn't have had Harry out there. What I'm saying is it's very cool to see that people aren't demoralized by that, and people are taking their chances saying, this is my chance to step up in his absence. And Lucas did that on Saturday.
Oh, yeah.
He looked like a badass doing it.
To your point, Lucas, I think people in some ways are freer to be themselves when Harry's not on the pitch.
A little bit.
And granted, you're always going to be better off with him on the pitch, but it kind of opens up players to be themselves, and the opponent doesn't really know where it's coming from as often. Like they can't target the one player to try and impact the game as easily when Harry's not there. And
who knows who it's going
to
be.
Yeah, and it could, and we have the talent to come from different angles, and I think that's why it's fun. You have a really good point there.
I want to bring up an interesting stat that I found when I was watching Match of the Day highlights. So I know this is a smaller sample size because Llorente has played significantly fewer minutes compared to Harry Kane, Son, Eriksen, etc. But here is what they provided. This is all, for all competitions for this season. And this is a... So Llorente had 7 goals, 5 assists, and per minute he was involved with those goals 1 out of 71.1 minutes. Son, he had 18 goals, 9 assists. His rate was 100.3 minutes. And Harry Kane, 24 goals, 6 assists, and his per-minute ratio is 108.4. So I think based off of what Lucas and Anthony were talking about, this kind of provides a testament to that, because not saying give the ball to Harry Kane and he will score and let him do what he wants, but there is a unpredictable variable when it comes without Harry Kane. Do we miss him? Of course we do. But this makes defenses think, you know, upcoming, you know, both Man City games, West Ham, Everton, I think Bournemouth, West Ham, etc. This gives them a lot to ponder about how they line up and who they mark.
Well, what that tells me is that tells me that Harry Kane is very good when Harry Kane is playing well. When Harry Kane's not playing well, no one plays well. That's the problem. And if we had a proper backup striker, then, like a lot of the teams do, like Man United, you know, they have 4 or 5 strikers, Chelsea and so on and so forth, Liverpool. You know, if you put in Harry Kane for 60 minutes and he's not playing very well, because it's Harry Kane, he's going to play the whole game. But if we had a proper, decent, world-class backup striker, then Harry Kane, if he's not having a good game, you play him for 60 minutes, you bring in the other striker and you play slightly differently, and maybe you'll score goals. Now, I'm not saying we'd be better without Harry Kane. What I'm saying is we're relying on him all the time. All the time.
And that's completely okay. Just because he's Harry Kane doesn't mean we expect you to be the elite level every single time. It's okay to have an off day.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to have an off day. He's going to have off weeks and whatever. So it would be great to have a backup striker.
Well, but I think we do have that backup striker, and his name is Heung-Min Son.
Exactly.
He is that good. When Harry's not available, he he plays striker, changes things up, and we're able to. Now, I agree, I'd like to have 2 or 3 more guys like Son that can either play multiple positions and come in as striker. But
that's the point. Harry Kane is never going to play 60 minutes and play a bad game, and then they go, oh, suddenly we're going to switch him to Son. We never do that.
Doesn't that fall on Pochettino, though?
Yeah.
He's the one that's... Because, Lucas, we talked about this previously. Lucas's theory on why he plays full 90 minutes every game is perhaps that he has an incentive-leaning contract. You know, if he plays this many amount of minutes, or if he has this many amount of goals, you know, he gets more money, of course.
I know, but that's not up to him whether he plays or not.
But like I said, this should fall on Pochettino. Like, when Harry Kane's not at it, like, you have to have the balls to take him out.
Yep.
It's not like Christian Eriksen where it's like he could go on a whim and score a worldie, you know, to win it or whatever.
And I guess a bit of the problem is that he's become so big, it's almost like he's become bigger than Pochettino being able to rein him in like that.
That's the problem.
It's because he's become so big and we treat him like he's this god, and please do not misquote me on this. He is a fucking god. And there's not one of us that doesn't appreciate who he is and what kind of special player he is. But it just doesn't mean that it needs to be every time. There is a time where you should be able to say, you know what, he's not having his best day. Maybe he comes off a little early. But because of how powerful and like he is the now face of our franchise going forward by signing that new contract, and he is now our figurehead moving forward. He is the face of the franchise. Because
that's the problem. He only doesn't play when he's injured.
Yeah.
That's the only time he doesn't play.
I'm not saying that Harry Kane has a big head, because I think it's far from it, but I think also...
It's not ego.
But he's so headstrong that it's like...
It's drive. It's
passion. Yeah, I know, but sometimes you have to...
You're absolutely right.
...sacrifice yourself for the betterment of the team instead of being like, I got to do this. If you're... And I would...
He could have a broken leg and still want to be out there. Doesn't mean it's the right thing for the team.
And I'll admit, for those who see me, I was never the greatest athlete. Far from it. But if I was on my... If they were dependent on me and I knew I was, like, not at it that game, like, put somebody else on. Because, like Kenny Power said, there's no I in team, but there's a you in cunt.
Well, but the thing with Harry Kane is, though, when he's not having a strong game at striker... What he tries to do is fall back and get the ball forward. He becomes more of a midfielder.
Yeah, and then he tackles, and then he hurts his ankle.
Exactly. But he tries to make a sacrifice for the team. So I think you're right. It's an unselfish move, but it still is. There needs to be a willingness to leave the pitch at times because. I understand that he's that guy that can get that goal at any point and save your team, and that's why your temptation is to keep him out there. But, like, if you're just using him as a midfielder or he's using himself as a midfielder because he's not getting enough opportunities as a striker to get what you need out of him, then I think, you have to be willing to sub him and try something different.
He needs saving for himself sometimes.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's what a manager should be doing. Yeah. Harry Kane's not the manager for a reason. Mauricio is.
And I want to kind of finalize this whole segment. Lucas kind of brought up a good point in our group chat a few months ago. Pochettino, great manager, but in-game manager, it's a little suspect at times.
He has moments. But he's getting better. And I think one thing that, to put one last positive spin on the Saturday that was Huddersfield, is even with Harry being out, I think that the microcosm of this season has been that next guy up mentality. As much as everyone was freaking out about us not buying people and now playing secondhand, like in looking back retrospectively, thinking, oh, well, if we had only bought so-and-so, we could have done this. By us not buying players, not saying it was the right move or wrong move, but by us not buying guys, we've now found out that certain guys are actual players for the future.
Oh, yeah.
We now know that what Juan Foyth can do. Wouldn't have seen that if we had bought a bunch of people. Or we also know that Harry Winks has made progressive steps despite his ankle chronically. We now have a Moussa Sissoko that we never knew we had. So there are all these good things. We now know we have a Lucas Moura moving forward. So there's Kyle Walker-Peters can play.
Or even Fernando Llorente. Mm-hmm. Like, while he's at he has the a end role. Of his contract... I think what he's done this season in a reserve role, he can warrant at least a one-year extension.
And that's basically all I'm saying is that's what I'm excited about for the run out here, like running into the end of the season, is just to see we now have one final opportunity for everyone to make their name for themselves, and I'm excited to see who steps up.
Sounds good. Okay, MVP, LVP. MVP, I think it's more or less obvious with Mora, but I mean, if there's honorable mentions... please say so as well.
Anthony? I have an honorable mention. I think Sissoko deserves credit here. I think he had an amazing game. Granted, it's against a cheap, easy Huddersfield town, but he just dominated. He was all over the place. His energy level was through the roof. People were bouncing off of his chest like
I agree.
Like he was like a plow going through the field. It was fun to watch, and I think he deserves some credit, but not MVP with and Moura out there.
The one thing I think people may have missed, which totally got me going, I thought it was awesome,
the push.
Yeah. Yeah. I forget what his name was on Huddersfield, but he shoved Foyth, Sissoko, he shoved him back and into the ground. So that made me very happy because you can tell that his morale is high. You know, he's got a lot of squad
pride.
Yeah, pride and unity with him. Did you have anybody else for
my
MVP?
Nobody else for MVP. It's hard to disagree with somebody that has a hat trick with that caliber of goals. But I would say my honorable mention would be Walker Peters. I thought he played great.
Enough.
It's fun to have a right back that'll have a little pace, do a little attacking. Good to see. But I definitely thought he played great.
Good
shout out, especially for sitting on the bench for that long.
Oh yeah,
MVP obviously Moura. Shout out to Moura's son who looked really good.
But should he be banned, though, because he went from the stands to the pitch?
No. He's fucking 5 years old.
Not, he's like two. He's not even two.
I'll leave it at that. But to round out the first half, LVP, I'll say that I have an NA listed on my sheet. Does anybody have anybody?
No. I mean, it's tough to, like, when you're playing a team that isn't really putting any good chances out there, how do you pick somebody who played poorly? I mean, they all did an adequate job. I mean, Foyth made a couple little errors, but you can't give him LVP.
Yeah. And I think
completely agree.
They, like I said before, they were so deflated. I think any of us could have hid somewhere on the field.
Oh, I could have played.
Like, we could have looked okay.
But could have been Hugo in his lawn chair back there,
with his cheese plate too. Of course. Okay, so that's going to wrap up the first half. For halftime, we got my back page update, and Catherine's back for a Lady Spurs update as well. Hi everyone, I'm Tommy, and this is your back page update. The Daily Star believes that Spurs are tracking Croatian goalkeeper Marko Melencia as Hugo Lloris's long-term replacement, with current backup Paolo Gazzaniga being promoted to starter. Let's be fair, I do believe Hugo Lloris has been inconsistent as of late. I think this is the wrong way of going about things. Instead, I think the club would be better off bolstering the back line. I also have reservations about Gazzaniga being a full-time starter. While he's been impressive replacing Hugo, I feel the sample size is still way too small to make a comparison. Multiple sources report Spurs want Barcelona loanee Andre Gomez. I'm perfectly fine with this, as Gomez has done well at Everton. We need a central midfielder. He certainly ticks all the necessary boxes. Of course, the biggest issues are either... will Spurs be able to afford him, and will Daniel Levy be willing to pay the transfer fee? Here's something we should dismiss immediately. The Daily Mail claims rivals Arsenal will move for center-back Toby Alderweireld by activating his release clause. Well, this isn't impossible. Remember, it takes two to tango. Does Toby want to deal with a disenfranchised fan base, terrible defense, and a potential of not playing in the Champions League? Toby is starting the end of his career. I doubt he would want to be in this mess. I'm Tommy, and this is your back page update.
Spurs family, I'm Catherine, and I'm back with what I'm pretty sure will be my penultimate Spurs Ladies update for this season. Last time I left you, Spurs Ladies had all to play for, with three big matches in the month of March. Now, the first match, which was originally scheduled for March 12th against Aston Villa, was actually postponed due to an incident that had taken place on the M1. The Aston Villa fixture has now been rescheduled for Wednesday, May 1st at 7:30 p.m. So that means the three big March matches ended up being two big matches. The first, therefore, was on Sunday, March 24th, as Spurs played at home against Sheffield United, a game that was sponsored by the Tottenham Hotspur Supporters Trust. Unfortunately, Sheffield took all 3 points as Spurs Ladies were handed its second home league defeat of the season with a 2-1 scoreline. The next match, and the last home match of the season for Spurs Ladies, was a top-of-the-table clash on March 31st between Manchester United Women and Spurs Ladies. It was a tough day, however, as Spurs Ladies fell to 4 overall losses with a 5-1 defeat. In other news, Jess Naz was named to the England U19 team for the UEFA Women's U19 European Championship qualifiers and started in the match against Sweden, all the while notching 2 goals and 2 assists in the first half of that game. Also for the young Lionesses, Rihanna Dean started for the England U21 squad in their game against Norway in the La Manga tournament. Over the 2 matches that the U21 team played, Rihanna scored and nabbed 2 assists. Meanwhile, Anna Philby and Megan Wynn were 2 of the 20 players called up to the Wales squad for its clash against the Czech Republic. All right, so back to the pitch. The next FA Women's Championship League match is on Sunday, the 21st of April, at 2 p.m. against Charlton Athletic. Then, after Charlton, is the aforementioned rescheduled match against Aston Villa on Wednesday, May 1st. And finally, the last match of the season is scheduled for Saturday, May 11th at 5:30 p.m. at Durham. As the championship stands currently, Manchester United is in pole position with 43 points after having played 16 games with 14 wins, 1 draw, and 1 loss. Tottenham Hotspur Ladies are in second with 39 points after 17 matches and 13 wins, 0 draws, and 4 losses. In third and fourth at 35 points are, respectively, Charlton and Durham. So with just 3 games to go, at least for Spurs Ladies, and the top of the table looking very tight, with 2 clubs looking for promotion to the FA Women's Super League, it'll be a very hectic and exciting few weeks, with hopefully Spurs Ladies grabbing as many points as possible and getting that promotion. All right, that's the segment. As always, if you have any Spurs or Spurs Ladies related questions, shoot them over to me on Twitter to my personal handle, @KatherineRupp, or hit up 4-Star Spurs on Twitter or Facebook. That's all for me this time. Come on, you Spurs, and come on, you Spurs Ladies.
All right, thanks to me for the back page update, and thank you again, Catherine, for the Lady Spurs update. For those who don't know, Catherine will come back probably the last episode of the season for a summary of Lady Spurs. So until then, we await.
And we really appreciate it. It's nice being the only podcast that really covers.
Yes. And thanks again, Catherine. Like Anthony said, much appreciated. So to jump into the second half, we have 2 social media questions. So Anthony, are they?
Yeah, so the first one comes from @HelloNewman. We've gotten a lot of questions from Kyle Newman. So thank you again for all your questions. His question asks, which would signify a more successful season? Runner-up in the Champions League or winning the Europa League? Try to answer without adding final league position to justify. So he wants us to kind of steer away from the league position, but wants us to say which is better, winning the Europa or second place in the Champions.
I mean, if you take the fact that we have a potential to do that and Arsenal, like that's clearly where a lot of that question's coming from, is us and Arsenal right there. But taking it out of it and taking, like you said, league position out of it, it's not even really a question. Winning the Europa League, you can walk through that tournament without playing anyone with a pulse. I think, what is it? Who's the other round that Arsenal? It's
Napoli. They're playing right now.
No. They have Napoli, but they get the winner of
Valencia. It's Valencia
in Villarreal. Yeah, and one of them is 18th in La Liga. That has a chance to be in the quarterfinals. 18th place in a crap league to begin with. It's embarrassing.
Well, Mourinho won the Europa League for Man United. Didn't improve their squad and got fired.
Exactly.
What difference did it make?
But taking your team to the title game of the most prestigious cup in arguably the world. You could say World Cup, but I'll throw a little. I like to believe that Champions League is the most pristine trophy you can win.
Well, and I want to go out on a limb and say I think it's ridiculous that the team that wins the Europa League gets a Champions League spot. To be honest, I think I would rather see the top 2 teams in the Champions League get automatic qualification, or even top 4 and then take away some of the league qualifiers. Like if you finished within the top 4, but definitely the top 2 in the Champions League. Why does the Europa League do it? Like, you got through a bunch of shitty teams. It was a long and lengthy tournament. Why is there a reward there?
I get where you're coming from, but it's also something that we need to remember that it wasn't too long ago where that was a big deal for us. Like, I remember the first year they made that a rule, I was so excited because I was like, hell yes, we have a chance to. Because we're not going to finish top 4 this year, but we have a chance to. So it is important to remember that we weren't too far off in that spot, but I agree. I think that it is silly because you understand why they did it. The reason that they did it was to make that league still matter.
Yeah.
It's similar to how relegation adds all this excitement and passion in games that would, you have 17 playing 18 and all of a sudden it's an exciting game because there's that threat of relegation, which is why people are excited and drawn to it. It's why they kept it there, was who the hell else is going to give a rat's ass about Thursday night Europa until they made it, now it's worth something again.
But why do you really earn something by, okay, you made it through a bunch of schlubs from leagues out in like Timbuktu or wherever you're playing, but and then whoever got knocked out on their ass out of the Champions League, probably because they weren't good enough to be there to begin with, and now you're going to get a trophy. I'm good with the trophy part, but like, why do you get to be in the Champions League for that?
Yeah, for me, it's when I hear when like Americans ask, why is there a Champions League, or why is there a Europa League? I kind of qualify by this. Champions League is more or less like the NCAA tournament. Europa League is like the NIT of Europe, to a certain degree.
You're talking about adding a third competition.
Yeah, Europa League too. And I'm like, yeah. It's all about money, unfortunately. But, Kyle, to answer your question, like Lucas and Anthony said, the answer is clear, or at least coming from me. You know, being runner-up of Champions League, I can at least say we got there if we ever get there. For example, Sevilla, they had a good run of winning the Europa League, I think twice in a row this decade, and then twice in a row past decade. We got their manager, Juan de Ramos, who we thought was going to potentially take us to the next level after Martin Jol. Aside from Robbie Keane and Dimitar Berbatov being sold, it blew up in our faces, even after when we won the League Cup. But also, the other thing I want to say is, in 2003, Porto was the last non-Big Five team to win the Champions League. Big Five in terms of
leagues.
So that would be Premier League, Ligue 1, La Liga, Serie A, and Bundesliga. Does anybody care that Sevilla won those four titles in two decades? No. People are going to care, or people will take more weight that Porto won, as an example, or even Monaco, who was runner-up that year, that lost to Jose Mourinho's squad. So,
but I will say this, though, is sure. It is important to remember that there is a massive value in Europa, because not everyone gets to sit here and support a club like we do, and we've been on the other end of that. In 2002, if you had told me, like, hey, you want to go win Europa, I would have sawed off my arm to do it.
Oh, yeah.
But it provides an opportunity for clubs that, like maybe a Wolves or a Burnley, like somebody that can get in there, and now they're competing in Europe. That's something that they don't get to do, and it's very special for them. So, yes, there is a value to that tournament, but to answer the main question, no, winning it versus finishing second in the Champions League, it's not even close. And I'm glad that as of right now, these are problems that we don't have to concern ourselves with. Let's hope that we can finish the year and never have to play in that competition again. But it is a valued competition for a lot of the right reasons. But I agree with Anthony's point that winning
it
shouldn't
mean
you're
bad. I loved watching Europa League games. I loved us being in that competition when we didn't make Champions League. But I'm just looking at it as a value thing. Like, why would you care about winning that if you were second place in the Champions League?
You don't.
And Kyle, I want to ask you this question. Pretend you're a Liverpool fan. Are you going to have more value at losing the Champions League last year against Real Madrid or losing against AC Milan 10 years ago? Or are you going to value the UEFA Cup win back in 2001 for them? You know, I don't. That's all I got. Lucas, what do you have?
And this is a perfect way to segue us into the next topic, which will be probably Man City for our
We got one more question.
But I was going to say, last point is, though, with the Champions League, by getting to the end of the line right there in Champions League, that's the thing that will attract players and make people want to play for your club. Nobody wants to play for the team that just won Europa League. They want to play for the team that's, unless you're Aubameyang, but like they want to play for the team that's going to be competing for Champions League titles, not the team that can compete for Europa League titles. And that's what a lot of the game is about now, is attracting stars and having them want to come play for your club.
Well, one last thing. You win the Europa League, you get a certain amount of money. you come second in the Champions League, you get 10 times the amount of money.
Yeah. It's like winning what? Like winning a Champions League game, you get a couple mil or something.
Yeah.
And winning the FA Cup, you get 600 quid, so.
Yeah. And yeah, if you win the Europa League, you probably end up with about 9 million.
And the merchandising on just making that final is just huge.
Oh, absolutely.
And taking the place in the league out of it, yeah. Like that's something you can definitely say. The merchandising, the money that the club gets is certainly worth it.
And in terms of TV rights, or not TV rights in terms of what we're paid, but in terms of exposure, if you're playing that Saturday afternoon in America,
whole world's watching.
You're playing on Fox. You're playing on Sky Sports in the UK. I think you're probably playing on like BT Sports 2.
Oh, it gets more coverage than the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, we have a second question, Tommy.
Shoot.
San Diego Spurs asks us, who from any of the relegated teams would you like at Spurs next season? I think I know everybody's answer, but...
Well, yeah, it's the obvious one.
Andre Schürrle?
No.
Oh, okay.
Sessegnon clearly is, I think, everybody's top choice. The whole league is going to be going after him once Fulham goes down.
Yeah, but I think there's a big... Again, that's one of those things where you make your club very attractive. I think we make it attractive to someone like him. He gets to stay in London. He gets to go play for arguably the best fullback whisperer in the planet, which is Pochettino. Look at what he's been able to do with fullbacks that have a third of his potential and age. Like, he's young, he's got all the tools in his toolbox, so if he could work with Pochettino, it's like, look what he's been able to do with the likes of Ben Davis and Trippier and Danny Rose and Serge and Walker Peters and Kyle Walker, the original. Like, what he's been able to do with fullbacks, if you let Sessegnon come in, train with him for a year or two, he could be world-class within just a few years.
I'm wondering if anybody has anybody that's not Sessegnon. Like, does anybody want Mooney? I mean, like, who are we going to pick up from the relegated sides?
Well, here's what
saw,
I have.
We saw Huddersfield last week.
Well, Huddersfield, I mean, I think they're kind of riding high when they had David Wagner as manager because he just kind of brought the team together. Unfortunately, it fell apart because they didn't really sign anybody of significance. And as you can tell, there is not a lot of significance from what I've seen that could add value to Spurs, whether it be as depth or as a starter.
Well, just a small point, but Fulham are already down.
Yeah.
Yeah, Fulham and Huddersfield both are already down.
Cardiff, well,
that's the question was of the relegated side, so that's really our two choices.
Well, Cardiff, it's going to be Cardiff.
It's going to be Cardiff, yeah. Too.
And but then, third. Well, so for Fulham, aside from Sessegnon, that's the obvious one. Andre Schürrle, I wouldn't mind having as for depth.
Too old.
28.
Too old.
Well, that's your opinion. Aside from that, I wouldn't mind Alexander Mitrovic. I think he would be of serviceable backup if Fernando Llorente left. He's like, what, 24 years old? If he plays backup, plays for the Serbian national team. So he can still be a starter for them, in theory. And then the last one I have, we were actually rumored to get him last year. I don't think he would be a star, but I think he'll be good for depth, and the English player quota is Alfie Mawson. I think he's solid. I don't think he's played that well this year, but that might be something to look into. And for argument's sake, if Cardiff City do get relegated, I wouldn't mind getting Neil Etheridge. He is a former Chelsea youth player. He plays nationally for the Philippines, but he does qualify as a homegrown player because he's born in London. And as of right now, all signs point to Michel Vorm leaving. So I think if the price is right and if he's willing, he could be a good third backup, a third keeper.
That was better research than most of us did, Tommy. So very good.
I try. Rick, do you have any other thoughts besides Sessegnon?
No.
Yeah, that's all right.
It's a very bad idea to pick up players from relegated teams. I mean, the teams are relegated for a reason.
That's really very much what I was going to say. Because I've heard you say it multiple times. And you got your outliers like a Shaqiri or a Sissoko that could prove value. But unless they're very young and can be brought into your culture and molded, when you have when you got those years on you, there's a reason that you were part of a team that is already relegated in mid-April.
For anybody who doesn't remember, this... Oh, can't believe it was 10 years ago. But we got Sebastian Bassong from Newcastle after they got relegated.
Exactly.
And like
he played his part.
He had a decent first season with us, but after that he fizzled out very quickly and then went to Norwich. And then he resurfaced again playing for the Legends match against Inter Milan. So yeah,
we needed bodies.
Yeah, but you know Pochettino, he's not going to pick bodies just for the sake of it. They all have to have a role. But
no, I said we needed bodies. That's why we had Bassong play.
Pochettino's
just going to go picking bums.
We needed bodies because Harry Redknapp was fucking stupid.
And Michael Dawson could not carry the defense all by himself. But okay, so next up we have two matches to preview. We're actually going to do them kind of all at once, so it's going to be not blurred lines, but it's going to be blended. So we're going to talk a little bit of this.
It's going to be a mess. It's going to be a mess.
Yeah. So we're going to talk a little bit.
We don't care.
If we talked about it separately, it would be boring.
Yeah. And we're going to rehash everything, like same players and whatnot. So we're going to do a little bit of Champions League leg two of the quarterfinal, and then we're going to do the Premier League for this weekend. So for those who don't know,
where the hell have you been?
Yeah, have you been in a coma, sleeping under a rock? Eh. But we're playing this Wednesday away at the Etihad at 2 p.m. or 8 p.m. London time. If you do not have cable, you can actually watch it on Univision. If you do have cable, you can watch on TNT. Or if you're in the UK, you can watch on BT Sport 2. For the Premier League fixture on Saturday, we are playing at 6:30, bright and early, 12:30 UK time. And we're playing on NBC Sports. And if you're in the UK, we'll play on Sky Sports Premier League. So Joe's good friend Dom actually did Trash Talk previously this season. And he's doing again previewing both matches. He actually went to the new stadium last Tuesday. So he actually has some good tidbits. So please pay attention. And Dom, take it away.
Trash Talk. To all the four-star Spurs listeners. My name's Dom. I'm here to talk about City, and this is Trash Talk. It's good to be back on the podcast, helping my old mate Joe out. I'm a lifelong Blue. I was on before the game at Wembley earlier this season, ahead of the big Champions League second leg tie at the Etihad on Wednesday. I've been a season ticket holder at City for over 25 years now, and I've really enjoyed listening to you guys over the course of the season. After coming on the first time, I've kept in touch with it, even though you misunderstood my point about Fernandinho. I didn't say he was our best player, I said he was our most important player. When you get at him or when he doesn't play, problems for City, as in fact Spurs showed last Tuesday night. But Joe's got a few questions for me, so I thought I'd answer them. And hopefully we can tee up the game on Wednesday, maybe even the game after that on the following Saturday. First of all, I was at the game on Tuesday, and Joe was asking about the experience as an away supporter. I've got to tell you guys, and it's not just because I'm on a Spurs podcast, it's the best stadium I've ever been to. I've been watching City home and away for well over 20 years, and I've been to 70-odd Football League grounds. Obviously, York away isn't going to compare, but lots of grounds that I have been to are really high-end, and Spurs is hands down the best stadium for football I've ever seen. And that noise from that stand with 17,500 in, that big wall, when Lloris saved that penalty, that was one of the loudest noises I've ever heard in my life. Not only did it affect us as away supporters, it definitely affected our players. But as a fan experience, it's brilliant. I mean, the stadium's great, the beer's great, the atmosphere is unbelievable. And it felt just, you know, take away the game, it felt, as a football fan, it felt like a real pleasure to be there, a real privilege to be there for such a big moment and to experience it. And I think Spurs will be massively successful. It's such a good platform for the future. I can see why the players would stay. I can see why Pochettino would stay, even if you don't qualify for the Champions League this season, which I actually think you will do. About the game last Tuesday, I mean, asked if, you know, Spurs deserved to win the game. I can see why Spurs fans would think that. I think in some ways you did. You were excellent. I think if the penalty goes in, it's a different story. You took the chance that you had. I don't think there were a great deal of chances in the game. I think big question marks about Fabian Delph at left back for the goal. But I think also when our team sheet was named, I think you could see there were some weaknesses in it. Some of it was odd, some of it was forced on us. But one thing you really did was press the middle really well. You let our centre-halves, particularly Otamendi, have a lot of the ball. I think if that's John Stones, it might be different. But you pressed our centre midfielders really, really well. And Harry Winks really led the charge on that one. I was seriously impressed with him. But again, you disrupt Fernandinho, you disrupt City, and that's what happened last week. As for this Wednesday, I think you're going to look at a different dynamic, different set of teams. I think we'll be much more like ourselves because we have to play with the principles we've showed. But then we've got the league game. Joe's asking me which I'd prefer. I think hand on heart, if you ask me, if I had to pick one, I'd win the Premier League, or win the Premier League game in order to win the Premier League trophy. I mean, you know, there's this thing about the City really like the Champions League. That's a load of rubbish. The City fans want to win the Champions League as much as anything else. Our problem is with UEFA, not the competition. But I think defending the title, back-to-back victories, would be something special. And even though I'm a City fan, I was brought up by my dad, obviously, he was a City fan, and my mum, who is an Everton fan. And I really, really don't want Liverpool to win the league. So I feel like we've got a kind of national responsibility to make sure that doesn't happen. But yeah, I think, I mean, in terms of rotation for Wednesday and then for Saturday, I think, you know, the idea of City having a strongest team, I'm not sure that's even true. I think we've got two strong teams in the mix of that 22 players. So I think you could easily see four different centre-halves play those two games and it'd still be a top-class defence. I think you could see a full rotation of full-backs. I think you could see almost a full rotation of centre midfielders. I think Aguero will start on Wednesday. I think Jesus will start on Saturday. But you're going to see two top-class teams. You're going to come up against two top-class teams. And I hope that we can really do a job on you on Wednesday. And I think that will take all you've got out of you. And I think hopefully Saturday should be fairly straightforward for us. It better I'd be, because we've got United away the following Wednesday. So for us, it's thick and fast. But looking forward to the game. Looking forward to hearing you guys talking more about it. Hopefully on the receiving end of a defeat. But all the best to you, and particularly in your new stadium. It's a new lease of life for your club after the fans have had 18 months having to deal with Wembley. I wish you all the best. You're a great team to watch. You do it in the right way. All the best to you.
All right, thanks, Tom, for that. Very interesting, and I'm actually glad that you enjoyed your experience at the new stadium. Anthony, would you like to preview both of these matches for us?
Yeah, and I'm just going to do, obviously, one preview because it would be the same thing over again twice. But so currently, Manchester City sits second place in the league with 83 points. That's 27 wins, 2 draws, and only 4 losses. Their most recent form, they won to Palace. They lost to a team called Tottenham Hotspur in the Champions League. They won to Brighton, won to Cardiff, won to Fulham, and won to Swansea. That must have been FA Cup.
Swansea was FA Cup. That was the one where they were like 2-0 down and then came back to win it.
I just was shocked to see Swansea again because it's been a while. Most recent was this Saturday, a 3-1 win to Crystal Palace, as we said. Upcoming, they're going to be playing Manchester United away in the league. So they have a big game coming up after these two games with us. So it gets tough for them here. So keep that in mind as we preview them. Their top goal scorer is Sergio Aguero with 19. Sterling is second with 15. Their top assist man is Raheem Sterling with 9. Sané also has 9, so that's a tie there. Top rated player is Sterling with 7.65. Aguero has a 7.57, and Sané has a 7.49. So these are pretty well rated players, and you don't even have your De Bruyne's or anybody appearing on this list. So like you know they're a stacked club. The last 5 times that we faced them, most recently was the win that we just talked about in the first half, the 1-0 win in the Champions League. Prior to that, we had 3 consecutive losses, and a draw back in January of 2017 was the last result that we got, other than the win that we just most recently had. So there you have it. I mean, I think we know what we're facing here.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks, Anthony. So I want to bring up a tweet that we had yesterday. So for those who don't know, Tiger Woods, he actually won the Masters after a huge absence. And here's the tweet. Last time Tiger Woods won a major, 2008. Last time Spurs won a trophy, 2008. Last time, thank you, Rick. Last time Watford made the FA Cup final, 1984. Last time Tottenham won a European Cup, 1984. I know this was lofty, or they're probably thinking the Illuminati exists, but realistically speaking,
it means absolutely fuck.
Yes, but can we win, or not win the second leg, but can we either tie,
can we go
or
through,
get the win and advance? What do you guys think?
The one important thing was that we didn't let in a away goal. So if we do get a goal in the Etihad, it means Man City have to get three. Now, we're fully capable of getting three goals against most teams. But three goals against us? That's a pretty steep hill to climb, I think.
We have to get that goal first.
We have to get the goal first. But, if we do have... You know, so we could lose 2-1. You know, any kind of draw we go through. So we do have a slight advantage. We do.
I think this is one of those scenarios where this might be the most capable team and the most capable scenario that we're ever going to see. We're playing them at their home ground now with no other choice but to throw numbers and attack. We're not going to see what we saw on Wednesday where they get to that, there's that feeling out period, and there's sometimes we have the possession, sometimes they have the possession. It's going to be a game where they have no other choice but to throw numbers forward, and we've seen what they're capable of. There's not many times that you see in the knockout stage of Champions League a team throwing up 7 goals on somebody at home.
But they run the risk of doing, if they do that and we get a breakaway goal.
True.
That's the dilemma they have.
They have no other option but to throw numbers. They can't really feel us out and try and nick a goal here and there. I think they're going to throw numbers forward, but like you said, that does present a bit of an advantage for us. It's just going to be, it's going to come down to us, how do we play it? Do we park the bus and let them just blast us, or do we actually get a little bit of possession in the midfield? Do we see a Sissoko Wanyama? Do we see Winks? Do we see Dele? I think the best part of Harry getting hurt, if you can spin it to an upside, is we didn't see the team that we're going to see on Wednesday last week. They brought on all those late subs. They didn't see the team that they're going to see last week either. I don't think Pep has a clue what we're going to be able to throw on him Wednesday, because I don't think any of us do either. I think it's going to be a total crapshoot as to what kind of lineup we play, and when we do, how do those guys perform?
For me, I expect them to batter us really hard and go on the attacking forefront, kind of like Dortmund did in the return leg. Whether they score the goals and get some results out of it, it remains to be seen. But let's go to Anthony. We do have a question regarding this match.
Well, yeah, so this is a new questioner, I think. I don't think we've had a question before. It's from Austin Bazan, I think is how it would be pronounced. I apologize if I mispronounce. But Austin asks, what's the best plan for Man City for the Champions League match? Tactically with the players available. And you guys have kind of pointed out that they kind of have to come after us. This, to me, like our tactic, we could do one of two things, just sit back and count and try and counter them like the way we've done against Dortmund, or we can come out hard and try and sneak in that goal early. Just sneak in that goal early and then get that away goal right away. I think that's one of the two options that we have, but what do you guys think?
Well, it's a good question, and I think there needs to be a little bit of blend, because you can't have the major risk we were to run if we were to pack it in and just try and hit them on the counter is when inevitably they score. If our whole game plan is to sit there and soak pressure and try and hit them on the break, and they control the ball for the first 40 minutes, let's say, and then they bang one in, how do we now zap ourselves out of it and switch to a let's go get a goal? when the entire match they've been playing in a let's go get goals mode and we've been playing in the exact opposite, it's very difficult to then try to talk yourself into winning the ball and starting to move the ball forward because you've been just sitting there for 40 minutes and they've been getting a flow of the game and we haven't got a foothold in the game. So that's the major risk you run. So there needs to be a little bit of a blend where we accept that we're not – it's going to be very similar to what we did with Dortmund and Madrid last year at Wembley, where it wasn't like we just parked the bus.
No, we sat deep.
We sat deep and we let them have the ball in certain scenarios, but we were never just parking the bus expecting them to batter us. We took advantage and we were smart in the moments that we needed to be in the midfield to counterattack, and we took advantage of those counterattacks, and that's what flipped the game on its head. So it needs to be somewhat in that balance where we are letting them have the ball. We're not going to go out there and play our usual game like we did on Saturday against Huddersfield. That's not going to be the type of game that it is because they're too quality. They have way too much talent, and they're in a position where they need to score. There's no other option for them. So you need to have that ability to kind of play it where, like Rick said, like we sit a little bit deeper. We have them – let them have the ball where they need to have the ball, but – we can't be afraid to let ourselves run and be ourselves, especially because we're going to have a lot of guys on the pitch, I'm assuming, with Son and Lucas and hopefully Dele, that can actually – Eriksen, like we're going to have our pretty strong counterattacking lineup out there. So if we get those opportunities, we need to be quick thinking and we got to hit them.
Austin, I'm going to answer a question kind of similar to how I envision the Premier League match this Saturday will be, because as right now Liverpool, they're tied – on points with them, even though Man City do have a game in hand, this is still a must win for them, regardless of any way you slice it. So for me, I wouldn't, but I think things might be more tense in the first or in the Champions League match. I wouldn't be surprised to play three at the back, just because they're going to be attacking more, and we need the defensive coverage. With like what Lucas said, I would like to see them play a more relaxed back line instead of pressing forward. Kind of feel them out for the first 10, 15 minutes or so and see how they organize and line up.
Who do you take out of the attack if you do three at the back in this game, Tommy?
Oh, fuck if I know. I mean, depending on if Dele Alli is not ready to play, then he would be the odd man out. I think right now Llorente actually doesn't start. We actually have a three-pronged forward with Eriksen, Son, and Mora, because if we're going to break on counterattack, Son and Mora will be the way to go.
And then Llorente plays a striker in that? Or?
No, or he'll come off of the bench.
Do you have Dele in there if he's able?
I don't know. Let's just say if Dele Alli is healthy, I'll have him start, and then Mora comes off of the bench. Because he has more, even though I know he had a great game against Huddersfield, but in terms of just matching up, he might burn out after 70 minutes. And
well, on Dele, just to jump in, I don't mean to cut you off, yeah. But it sounds like he's been training with a cast, so it seems like he might be ready. It's more about getting him comfortable with the idea of falling and having to catch himself on that arm. In an actual game situation, just and whether he's ready for that or not, is kind of what I've heard.
Well, especially for this first match, I don't mind Trippier if he plays on Saturday, but based on it sounds like Aurier back from his bereavement?
No, I don't think
so. Well, if he was,
I would love to see him.
I would rather have him start because, 100%. You know, in Europe he plays better as of right now. And yeah, but I think the other option, I don't even know the status on Eric Lamella. I don't want him to start, but I would like him to come on as a sub potentially for his pressing. But
and
yeah.
Like I said earlier, I'm like, that's one of the things I think that's the best advantage we have right now, is that if none of us can sit here and kind of even sort of predict a lineup, I don't think City will be able to either. And I think that I'm banking that Poch is going to be – let's hope he's at his best and he can put that one lineup that's going to be that magical lineup that can hit him, because I would like to see us in a back four. I think that that's when we've been able to keep our shape best, and actually we've looked more organized when we're in the back four as opposed to the back three. Back three just hasn't seemed to work for us this year. It's had its moments. I think it's looked better when we've had park the bus type teams, but this will not be that. And I worry that like somebody like Sanchez will get caught out. But I think that we'll probably see a back four. I think we'll probably see Tripp and Davis, or excuse me, Danny. But I think that that midfield question is going to be the big one. Is Dele healthy? Is he ready to go? Do we see Sissoko and Winks? Do we see
Wanyama
come on as a sub? It's going to be interesting.
Even if Dele Alli does play, does he play deeper and pair up with Sissoko even? You know, because Eriksen, I don't think he's going to play deep. So, unfortunately, it is not even the fact that Harry Kane is out either. I think these upcoming two matches with... there's just too many variables on what is he going to bank on? Is he going to be like... line up like Dortmund in the second leg? Or is he going to assume that Guardiola is going to go for an all-out attack? You know, it's going to be very tricky. I think overall, though, I think with Pochettino, he's very... it's not that he's predictable, but it's like he kind of goes with the norm of lineup. So it's probably going to be a lot easier than what we're describing.
Well, I think like when you look at these two games lined up, this is more of a dilemma for City, is the thing that we have to our benefit. They have to face us twice, a pretty good team in their league. Now, they can either play us harder in the first game and try and move up in the Champions League, but they have the league to worry about here. They're chasing Liverpool in the league right now. They could potentially say, well, they've got to win that second game. Clearly, they want to win both. But they have this dilemma of where they pour their best resources, like because if they drop points to us in the league game, even if a draw could just end the league for them, and even if they get through us in the Champions League, they still could have to face Barcelona down the road. I mean, their path to the Champions League is much tougher than their path to the league right now, where we only have one path other than to stay in the top four. Their dilemma is bigger than ours, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, because the last thing they want is to beat us and lose to Man United.
Yeah.
That's the last thing they want.
And it's a really great point that you bring up, Anthony, because you also have to look at, they have us on Saturday and then they have United on that Wednesday. It's like Liverpool's running, again, they have the game in hand on Liverpool, but Liverpool's running is very easy. They're running...
In comparison, their
running is simple. And what we have the advantage is, theoretically, what are our main two goals? Would we like to win the Champions League? Yes. But the main goal is to finish top four and secure next year's Champions League. That's our main goal. Theoretically, we could lose on Wednesday and lose on Saturday and still achieve both our goals.
Yeah. And
we could lose 2-1 on Wednesday and we could still go through. We could lose on Saturday and we could still finish top four. So we can have that. They can't.
Oh, someone actually worked out that even if we lose on Saturday, the league game, but we won the other four league games,
we automatically finish top four.
We're guaranteed
because
top four.
Man United and Chelsea play each other.
Because Man United.
So yeah, we do have that. Where again, we want to finish above Arsenal more than anything in the world. But more importantly, the most important thing is to finish top four, and we would love to win this tournament. So we could win Champions League by losing on Wednesday. They can't. We can finish top four by losing on Saturday. They can't. So that is a little bit a great point.
Well,
you
they
brought
can
up.
Finish top four, but they can't win.
Oh
the
no,
league,
but they can't.
Yeah,
that's
goal.
Not their goal. Their goal is to keep Liverpool from. And I mean, suck to say, but I wouldn't mind seeing them win it. Can't imagine a world in which Liverpool wins the freaking league. But that's not our podcast.
Okay, so I kind of want to still gear or involve the Premier League game on Saturday. So. Excuse me. So my question is, what will we see differently, whether it be lineup, solid play, etc.? You know, what will be contrasting compared to Wednesday versus Saturday?
I don't think there will be one. I think we'll play both games exactly the same way.
What about Manchester City, though? Do you think
they're going to rotate?
Okay, because
they're good enough to rotate, and they have to.
And they're playing Spurs, and Man United within a 7-day span. Those are three quality opponents in three very tough games, and each one of them is a cup final to them at this point in the season. So I think they're going to rotate. Fortunately for them, rotation never seems to really be a problem for them because they have a...
They have two squads at
their disposal. Yeah, they have two full-class squads. So, but we might see...
You say that, but we beat them 1-0.
Yes, we did. And
with a rotating squad.
So it'll be very interesting to see what happens. And again, it sounds silly, but whatever happens Wednesday, I think will have a massive impact as to what happens on Saturday. I think those two games are going to correlate a lot more than we think they will.
I think we see the stronger squad for the league match, to be honest, because they're looking at their road to the Champions League, which they certainly want, and they're going to play hard for both. So I think they're going to try and split the squad pretty evenly. Clearly, we saw De Bruyne get a rest against us last time. I think we see him in this first game. Second game, maybe we see another rotation similar to what we saw in this first Champions League, but it all depends upon what happens in that Champions League game. Like, if we knock them out of the Champions League, then they can just go full hog into the league, and they're not going to do it again. They're not going to lose to us again. So I think so much depends upon that first game. It's tough to tell what they're going to do, but I think we have to go with a fairly strong squad both
times. We have no choice.
Yeah, we don't have the players to have anything but our best squad.
The biggest advantage we have is they play Man United afterwards.
Yeah.
That's the, you know, it's one of two games they would never, ever want to lose in this scenario, and one's Liverpool. And one's Man United. They do not want to lose to Man United.
Have their championship hopes ruined by United, let alone.
They don't want that in a million years. So they might actually take our game slightly easier.
On Saturday?
On Saturday, just so they're fit for that Wednesday game.
I actually think a little bit of a contrast there, Anthony. I think that we're going to see the best available City squad on Wednesday. I think that, like we heard Dom say it, with the Trash Talk segment, he talked about how personally he would choose to win the league because that's important to him. But Pep doesn't think like a supporter. Pep thinks about there's ego and there's status and there's glory. And he's already been there, done it when it comes to winning.
And this is his third season. And he hasn't won the big one yet for them.
He wants to win the big one with City.
Sorry, Anthony, I'll be quick. And he's already done that like within three seasons. He's already won the Champions League and the league title for Barcelona and Bayern Munich already. So
he's won there's a little pressure on City. There. He's won every available cup for City except for this big one, and I think that he's going to want to win that for at least nothing else than his own ego.
Well, and on Dom's point, like he points out that, and I don't think we misunderstood him. I think we understood that he thought that Fernandinho is the most important player. Not the best player on their team, but he's important to their squad. Similar to how I think Eriksen becomes important to our squad in ways that we don't realize. Are we going to see him both games, do we think? Is he there? Are we going
to... Who, Eriksen?
No,
Fernandinho. There's a rumor that he's not fit for the Wednesday game.
Well, there's a rumor that he should have had a red card and been sitting this one out anyway.
That's a word on the street, at least.
So that also is like it could throw a crimp into either game if he's not available for some reason.
Well, who would be the other D mid for Man City? I don't even
may not have one.
Really? That's the one.
They don't have one. They have Bernardo Silva. They have Silva. They have Gundogan. They have De Bruyne. But they don't have a Fernandinho.
Weird. Well, I guess I wouldn't be surprised then if. Well, to be fair, it's kind of like how Spurs have been playing this
season. We don't
have
a backup Eriksen.
yeah, unfortunately. But, no, well, let's be fair. Like Spurs, we haven't been playing with a true defensive midfielder a lot of times this season. They got to go on the forefront and attack like crazy to get these two goals. So, I wouldn't be surprised then if Guardiola actually doesn't play without a D-mid. Just because because they need the goals.
No, but if they've got the choice, they'll play Fernandinho.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if I haven't got the choice, they'll play everybody else.
Yeah, and we've done that too. I mean, we went with the only Winks against Real, and it worked out. So, I mean, I'm sure that Pep has faith in his squad to come up with a solution if he's not available. But that's a bit of hope for either of these games if there's a chance that he's not available.
Right.
And as Dom points out, he is so important to their squad. Like, and there's not many links that you can pick out in their squad and say, like, without this player, they're in trouble, like most squads.
And I think, like, are we about to do predictions?
Finalize your thoughts. We will, yeah.
I was going to say this is a good segue into it. I think the most important word you said there was hope, and I couldn't be happier that we are in the quarterfinal going into the second leg, and we are sitting there with it in our control whether or not we go to the semifinals. I mean, that's all I wanted from this game was give me a second leg where we could be in a position to actually take it to a semifinal. And this is going to be one of those games where, in theory, they're going to be doing what they do best, throw numbers forward and try and smash in goals. But Champions League this year as a whole, not just with Spurs, has been such a crapshoot where you have weird VAR moments could flip the tie on its head. We could get a weird, cheeky handball going our way in the second minute, and it could all of a sudden flip it on its head. So the fun part is we don't know. All we can do is throw out our 11 and hope that each one of them has it in them that day to go and get their job done.
All right, sounds good. Okay, so let's do predictions. First, let's do Champions League. Who wants to go first?
We win 3-0.
Of course. Who's scoring?
Lucas and Son.
Who's scoring the third one?
Wanyama.
If that happens, I will be with you here on Wednesday. I will entire bar tabs on me.
If Wanyama scores? Happens, or
if we win 3-0, I don't even care who scores. Okay. It's going to be three own goals, but if we win 3-0, Rick's bar tab is on me.
If we win 3-0, I'm skipping my evening appointment, and I'm starting to drink and going. I'm celebrating with you guys, but I'm going to take a different approach. I do think that we're going to advance, but I think it's going to be a 2-2 draw. I just have a feeling that this is going to be one hell of a battle on both sides. I think we get a goal out of Son, and I think we get a goal out of Eriksen. I wanted to give one to Dele, but I'm not confident that Dele will be back for this one as much as I think I hope he will be. I think Son and Eriksen do it for us, and we advance on a 2-2 draw.
Okay.
I'm going to say we lose. We're going to lose 2-1, and we're going to go through. We're going to lose 2-1, and it's going to be Dele. We're going to go down 2-0, and Dele's going to find something weird in, like, the 75th, and it's going to send us through. And then the last 20 minutes are going to be just hell on earth for us, but we're going to go through.
I can't believe I'm going to say this. I'm going to say we're going to lose 1-0, but we'll win on PKs, and that's going to be a scary 30 minutes.
No, we win on away goals. No,
we don't have any.
No, you're right.
Oh, okay.
No, you're right.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Okay, so let's do City again for the Premier League on Saturday.
We're going to win 3-0. Lucas, Son, and Wanyama.
I noticed a recurring trend here.
Mine's a little bit more thoughtful. I think because we win in the Champions League, I think we do lose this league game because they need to win every league game to try and advance and win the league. And I think that's where their eyes are at more. Like, they're certainly going to try and stay in the Champions League if they can, but the league's more important to them right now, and it's more in reach. So I'm going to say we lose 2-1 in this one, and our goal is from Sissoko.
Are we even
if that happens, I'll buy your bar.
Are we even coming back to London, or are we staying up there after Wednesday? I've read somewhere that they were thinking about just staying up in Manchester.
I wouldn't be surprised. I know
it would make sense.
I mean, what's the point?
It's been talked about with other, or it's been discussed last season where it's like if you're playing at Norwich, they'll fly back that night. So I wouldn't be surprised if they fly back from Manchester that night.
Mm. I thought you were talking about us. I'm like, you're buying us tickets? We're going to the game.
I was going
to
wait till the end, but I surprised you. We all got away tickets. No, I think we're going to draw. 1-1 is going to be Saturday. I think it's going to be 1-1, and Sun's going to find it. I think they're going to have a little bit of a downshift with United coming up.
I'm going to think over heart over head, I guess. Or no, what I want versus what I think will happen. I think we're going to lose 1-3. I'm going to say Sun will score the goal. And the reason I say this is because I do not want Liverpool to win the title. So if we advance, I will gladly lay down and let Man City take the win. Just so they can push and break Liverpool's hearts and make sure that they solidify their choking from Christmas time.
Well, imagine being a Man United fan. do you try and beat Man City and help Liverpool? Or do you roll over to Man City?
Oh, yeah, that is wrong. Yeah,
like, that's us deciding between like Chelsea or Arsenal who would help win the league.
Which worse for them?
Yeah, they are. Yeah, I remember the, what, 80s huge rivalries, even now, 90s. Now, yeah. It's
if you're damned United, if you do. What do you do?
Yeah, damned if you do and damned if you don't.
They need top four. That'll be their goal.
Oh, well. So, as usual, come for both games or at the Atlantic Bar and Grill because we'll have both of them on the TV. I expect a big crowd for both games, even though I won't be here on Wednesday. But, oh, well, I'm Lucas, Anthony, we'll and all three. All three of you will be there?
I'll be here for both of them now. I rearranged my work schedule. I moved my appointment that I had in the middle of the day so I can make this game. I'm just not going to be able to drink.
I'll be working, so I can't see it.
What about Saturday? Same?
I'll be working. I can't see it.
Okay.
Jesus.
So
I'm going to be sitting here by myself on Wednesday?
So we're going to have to blame your boss then, whoever he or she may be. Mm. So
nothing wrong with my boss.
But I will be here on Saturday, though, so look out for me if you're coming. But this will wrap things up, of course. Thanks again for Rick and Sound, Anthony for scheduling and production, Charlie for the music, Kevin for social media, myself for the back page update, Catherine for Lady Spurs update, Victoria for the logo, and of course the Atlantic Bar and Grill for the use of their recording space. As usual, hit the subscribe button, write us a review on iTunes if you like our podcast. If you don't, I mean, write something. And or go over wherever you got your podcast. So that could be Stitcher, Podcast Addict, or even go to our website because we have all of our episodes on there. And speaking of website, check our website at 4starspurs.com. Other social media, check us on Twitter and Facebook at 4starspurs.com or 4starspurs. Come on, you Spurs.